Hello, friends, and welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. Right now, you are listening to my special series on friendship. On February 5th, Girls Club, the book I wrote with my mom and sister, will be making its way into the world. It is a book about the profound importance of women's friendship. We believe that women flourish in community and that we need each other to grow, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. And in a world as lonely as ours, friendship isn't something frivolous. It's a profound thing and a necessary part of our lives. That is why we reached out to women we admire to discuss this profound and important topic. Over the next 3 weeks, I'm excited to share these interviews with you, and I hope that they encourage you as much as they have encouraged me. So make sure to purchase your copy of Girls Club, and then make yourself a cup of tea, sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of Speaking with Joy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our series on the Girls Club. We are looking at the profound importance of women's friendships, the way that they call us to grow spiritually and emotionally and intellectually. And as in support of the book, as we've been releasing this, we have sought out the voices and opinions of women that we really admire. And I am so excited to have today on the show Caitlin Beattie. Say hello, Caitlin.
Hey, Joy, how are you?
I am doing wonderfully. It is so good to chat with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this one. So I think I first encountered you when I was actually a senior at Biola University, and you gave a talk, if I'm not remembering wrongly. Is that right? Do you remember?
I did. I visited Biola back in 2015. Biola does a Women's Appreciation Month or, you know, Women's Leadership Month. And mm-hmm. I came out to speak in chapel for that event.
Yes. And I remembered that very vividly because I was right on the cusp of graduating and going into work and all that. And it was so kind of fun and inspiring to see you kind of flourishing and doing meaningful and important things in the world. And so that was cool. And then you recently wrote a book that was published in 2016 called It's A Woman's Place, right?
Yeah, A Woman's Place, A Christian Vision for Your Calling in the Office, the Home, and the World. So it came out in 2016 and really provides a theology of work and vocation specifically for women. I was an editor at Christianity Today magazine for about 10 years, and when I served there, I realized that there was such a dearth of resources for women about work and vocation. So I really wanted to fill that space and give other women the type of resource that I wish that I had had when I was starting out in my career.
Yeah, I think that is so important. And we'll talk about this later, but I think all of us having a sense that we do have a vocation, something that's bothered me sometimes is the sense that that if someone's a mother, that that's not part of their vocation, like that we all have callings and things that God asks us to live into and to develop and to be as best as we can. And for me, having friendships and women that I can look to has been so important in that. And a funny note is that you came and interviewed a whole bunch of students at a study abroad program in Oxford.
Yes.
And I was in that group. And so that was my second time encountering you. And I didn't realize it, but then later on, my friend Ruth Moon. Do you know Ruth Moon?
Yeah. She's written for Christianity Today, and we're writer friends. So yeah.
She's good friends of my family, and her younger sister was my best friend growing up. And she sent me a text, and it had the picture. She's like, "Look, you're in this section of the book." So that was fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, it's been just wonderful to kind of watch your work, to see what voices and what topics you have kind of sent into the world. And mm-hmm. Tell us a little more about where you are now. What are you up to these days?
Yeah, so I ended up leaving Christianity Today back in 2016, shortly after the book came out, and really wanted more space to do some freelance writing and speaking and just develop more content around the book as it was coming out. And so mm-hmm. I did the freelance life for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then back in September, so just a few months ago, I took a full-time position as an acquisitions editor with Brazos Press. Brazos is connected to Baker Publishing Group. They're based in Grand Rapids, kind of a mid-sized Christian publisher. And so we do a lot of books from academics who are wanting to write for a more popular audience, as well as Christian leaders who want to kind of push some of the edges of how Christians engage theology, politics, social issues. And so I've been there for 3 months. In the course of taking that job, I have also recently moved to New York City from the Chicago suburb.
Oh my goodness.
Today actually marks, I think, a full month that I've been here in Brooklyn, and it's been exciting, overwhelming, like the best city in the world, and also the most like most difficult city in the world. So I'm learning as I go, but I'm grateful to have the chance to live here.
That is amazing. Have you found any of your favorite places yet in New York? That's whenever I move somewhere. I've moved like 5 times in the last 3 years just for grad school and stuff. And whenever you move to a place, something I always try to do is kind of find my spots that I like that are my favorite places. So have you found that yet in New York?
I have found some. So I am, this is totally nerdy, but I am keeping track of every coffee shop, restaurant, and bar that I visit.
That's amazing.
Them and determining which ones are my favorites, which ones I want to go back to. I mean, obviously, there's so much to choose from in a place like New York. And the coffee shop is especially important because I work from home. So I'm really looking for a place that has a good vibe that I want to work from on a regular basis. But beyond that, I mean, I spent time here over the summer and I love Central Park. There's a section on the Upper West Side called the Cloisters, which is kind of an old monastery that is made to look like it's from the 16th century, and it's in a big park as well. So I actually love the natural spaces in New York. I think when you live in such a congested place, you start craving some connection to the natural world. And so those have been a couple of my favorite places.
That's so wonderful. One of my brothers lives in New York, and I remember being struck the last time I visited him that Central Park is amazing because you're in this thriving, busy metropolitan place. But then you have this kind of oasis that everybody kind of runs away to of beauty and nature. And you always got to find those places. And it's funny too, because I know that feeling with a coffee shop. I kind of think of it as like when I buy coffees, I think of it as the rent for the office I don't have because it's just kind of a necessary part of life. And everywhere I've lived, I've had one spot that was kind of my go-to place. And that's it's such a fun part. Well, I guess we should actually start talking about friendship. So I thought I would open, as we've been doing with these other podcasts, with a question, just a more general kind of personal question to you, which is, tell me about a friendship or a group of friendships that has significantly shaped who you are as a person.
Yeah, that's a great question. So my answer is actually a group of friends. And to be honest, we mostly keep in touch via a private Facebook group, which sounds really impersonal. But the reason that we use that is that all of us are writers, and all of us are women, and all of us are working in kind of Christian writing and publishing. And so the group came together around a website that I used to edit called Hermeneutics that was part of Christianity Today. And we started, you know, initially, this was almost 10 years ago now, we really started the group to create ideas, and it was kind of specifically about publishing and creating content for Hermeneutics. But over time, like, we have all become really good friends, and the group now is really not about generating article ideas. It's really about checking in on each other's lives. I think it helps that all of us face the challenges of being writers, whether that's, you know, your book is getting criticism, or, yeah, you know, you're trying to write for a mainstream publication and you're getting a lot of edits, or you're getting, you know, just kind of not only the challenges of being a writer, but being a public figure.
Yeah.
And so that has been such a place of encouragement. I think it really helps that even though there's a lot of diversity in terms of life stage and like types of topics that we're writing about, we're all kind of connected and being out in the public square. Yeah. And so there's a lot of encouragement there. I think if you're doing difficult work on a daily basis, it's really important to find the
inner circle.
Yeah, an inner circle. And, you know, now it's like we're sharing prayer requests and baby pictures. And, you know, it's much more personal than it was 10 years ago. So it's been really exciting to see that develop over time.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think something I found in my life is that some of the deepest friendships I end up developing are come out of a shared experience or a shared vision or a shared kind of purpose in life. So for me, like probably one of my most formative friendships is the group of girls that I got to know in grad school. And I had gone, I'm doing grad school actually currently doing, I'm almost done with my PhD, in St. Andrews, and which is in Scotland. And I found these three other girls. We're all American. We're all, doing degrees in theology, and we were all like kind of the only women in our programs for the most part. And, we initially kind of just got together out of necessity, you know, out of, okay, can you read my paper? Can you give me ideas? Like, let's, you know, kind of that need, like you're describing, that you got together with a specific purpose. But out of that grew this really kind of rich friendship, because we were at similar places in life. And now we also have, we don't have a page. We have a, private chat, titled The Tribe, that is kind of ongoing and that continues with prayer requests and updates. And yeah, it's a really special thing too, I think, to have not just a friend, although I have precious friends who are one-on-one friends, but kind of a network, a net of people. Well, that's wonderful. And it's fun to hear similar experience. And I look forward to seeing where the tribe is in 10 years, since it sounds like you guys have stuck together. One question I'd love to ask you, we were talking about kind of what things we wanted to talk over in this. And, one I would like to talk about is how we make space for friendship in a very busy world. And to kind of preface that, my sister and I were talking about how we feel like this, in this time, busyness and loneliness are just kind of the condition of what it is to be a person in the world. And I mean, that's backed up by studies. You know, they say that there's a study recently by Harvard that was titled The Epidemic of Loneliness. And I thought that was a pretty strong word to use for this phenomena of loneliness. They said half of people say that they feel alone or like they can't connect. But it's funny because, I also saw a study that said that technically we have more free time, than previous generations, but we're finding it really hard to connect. And so I would just love to hear your thoughts on kind of maybe what do you think are some of the things that are causing that difficulty to connect? And then also, how do you kind of strategically seek out friendships in this kind of condition of the world that is busy and often lonely?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, just how sad is it to think about like one of every two people
I know.
In the world saying that they feel alone? I think, you know, some of that is just the ways that we make choices about where to live.
Yes.
I think, you know, a couple generations ago, and, you know, this ties into education and mobility and wealth. And
yes.
You know, there have been a lot of really positive advancements, obviously, over the last couple generations. But I think one effect of just cultural and economic changes is that we're more prone to make choices about where to live based on a job rather than based on where are my friends or where is my family even.
Yeah.
And so we were trading on maybe ambition or career goals for being in a type of community where something is demanded of you. You know, we're in such an individualistic culture where one's personal desires and preferences at any given time kind of are expected to trump other commitments and demands. And I think when you start talking about friendships that demand something of you, where it's not just, oh, we have fun together, but, you know, a friend is in crisis and needs me, or a friend who has little kids needs help, like, raising them, or, you know, a friend is going through a health scare, that's when I think as individualistic Americans, we start getting skittish. Like, what is going to be demanded of me in terms of time and energy? Yeah, I also think, you know, you can't talk about loneliness and busyness without talking about technology. And I just mentioned this private Facebook group where, for that case, you know, technology has allowed these women to connect and stay friends across state boundaries, across, you know, time and space. And I'm really grateful for that. There's no way that, you know, the 20 of us or so who are in the group would be able to invest in each other without the use of technology. But I also think that we are all probably on some level replacing that in-person connection with tech, you know, screen time, essentially. And there's, so you might have more friends kind of on one surfacey level than most people did, you know, 50 years ago, but how deep do those friends go? And are you really able to be known and be vulnerable across Twitter or Facebook? And there just is something about that in-person connection that can't be replaced by a screen. And that's why it's so important, you know, as you think about habits that can sustain healthy friendships, and making a point to see each other in person is so key, whether that's, you know, a standing once a month coffee date or something more informal, or if you don't live close by, saying, I'm going to come to you once a year. You're going to come to me. We're going to take turns. But just making sure that that in-person connection is part of the rhythm of the friendship. Because otherwise, I mean, we all have had the experience of having friends where there was closeness and then circumstances change and maybe someone moves away. You kind of feel like you lose that friendship. And, you know, I am a believer in the idea that there are friendships that are for seasons. You know, we're not able to sustain every friendship we've ever initiated in the course of our lifetimes. So, you know, obviously there are boundaries and there are certain friendships that you want to invest in certain times of your life, but it is sad to think about friendships that have been lost merely because there's not the intentionality of keeping the connection.
I think that's such a good point about the intentionality of seeing people face to face. And for me, I've thought a lot about this relationship between technology and isolation, because I have encountered many people who, I won't say many people, but I've said I have encountered a few people through social media who I actually became friends with in real life. But that connection was valuable because it pushed me towards the real connection in real life. Do you know what I mean? And so I've been thinking through that in my relationship with how technology connects me. Is how do I let it push me towards real relationships rather than pulling me away from face-to-face? And I think when it pushes us towards those real face-to-face friendships, it can be really valuable. And, you know, one of my best friends was a friend from undergrad, and we have not lived in the same place since we graduated however many years ago that was, 5. And so we visit each other once a year, and she's coming in 2 weeks. And you can't make that commitment with everyone. And I think that's something else too, is that you have to learn to say no to some, not no in a hard way, but no in the sense that not everyone will be your best friend. But to pick that the people who you do pick, you really make a priority to connect with them over and over again, you know? And, I think that's a really good point. You started to talk about something else too, which was kind of the idea of the cost of friendship. And we, like you said, we get really kind of squirmy when we think about the idea that a friendship might cost us something, whether that's time or, awkwardness or whatever. And, I've actually heard a lot of times people say, well, the thing about a friend is you have no obligation to them. And I remember I thought, oh, is that true? And I think that on the one hand, you know, you don't want to meet somebody for the first time and go, you're obliged, you know, to invest in my life and make me a better person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I do think that as relationships grow deeper, there is this sense that if we want them to be deep and to be soul shaping and heart satisfying, that there is kind of a cost that we have to count up and an investment that we have to give. So what do you think that looks like when you have friendships through times that are trying, when you have tragedies? What does that look like for you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it is the case to say that friendship should be defined by a certain kind of mutuality.
Yes.
So, there has to be, I think in general, there has to be a sense that each person in a friendship is invested in the other and that there's a clear give and take back and forth, like almost a sense of equality that you're both making the effort to reach out to one another to keep the friendship going. There's enough space for both people in the friendship. So I think all of that is good. But there's also the recognition that there are times in our lives when we actually need more from our friends than they do from us. And then there will be times when our friends need more from us than we do from them. And there's still mutuality baked into that because you're also working under the assumption that, hey, like I might need more from you now, but we do this for each other. Right.
Yeah.
But I wish there were more concrete or even formal ways that we could bond ourselves and bound ourselves to each other as friends. I mean, we have, you know, in a romantic relationship, we have all these rites and ceremonies built around the formation of a covenant and a commitment and saying, like, I will be with you till the end. But we don't have that as modern people in our friendships. And I think that's really a loss. I think especially for single people where you're, yeah, and I'm speaking as someone who's not married. I mean, friendships are my primary form of relationship, you know, even in some ways, like more central than my family. And I long for certain types of friendships that are where it's understood, like, we're in it for life. Like we're, you know, I'm not going to disappear after a few years and you're not going to disappear after a few years when things get hard, but that there's a sort of understood commitment. And I just think of one friend of mine who, we used to live in the same town outside of Chicago. And then she moved back home to Alabama several years ago. And she and her husband have four young kids. And I am her second child's, godmother. And I think of godparenting as kind of this one form where as a single person, I'm tied to not only her, but also to her family. And I've kind of made this like spiritual commitment to her family in a way that keeps me connected to them for life. I mean, I remember this friend's name is Sarah. I remember Sarah joking like, well, now that you're Ruthie's godmother, like we have you for life. But it was like, which was really sweet and was a way of her saying, we want to be connected to you forever. And having this more formalized relationship with one of my children is a way to establish that. So, And I think too, I mean, even, you know, married friends who are in my life would say that the marriage relationship doesn't satisfy their need for connection. And I think maybe especially as women, you know, my mom and my dad have a wonderful marriage and they would say that they're each other's best friends, but there are just certain things that my mom doesn't want to talk to my dad about as a woman. And so I think there has to be, you know, space and good dialogue to say that you can't have all of your relational needs met in one person, including like your spouse.
Yeah. I think we put an enormous amount of like weight and pressure on marriages to satisfy all these needs that were really meant to be satisfied, like in the context of community and church and other relationships. I even just think about, this is a very visceral example, but my sister, who also wrote the book with me, my mom, recently, she just had a baby in March last year. And she needed my mom and she needed me. And there were, like, obviously it's wonderful to have that relationship with her husband, but there are things that we bond together, we can help each other with, we can meet each other's needs. And as women in that very kind of visceral stage where you need other women around you, that just mm-hmm. having your husband wouldn't have kind of done the duty. But I think that because we put so much pressure on marriage to fill all of those needs, then a lot of times singles are kind of left out in the cold of how do I really meaningfully integrate myself into other people, into really meaningful, lifelong friendships. And as you were mm-hmm. talking about, that is so special. It's special to be somebody's godparent. I also have a goddaughter and I take that really seriously. And, mm-hmm. My mom, when she was in her 20s, she worked as a missionary in, Eastern Europe when it was still communist. And she ended up becoming friends with the one other woman that was working there with her. Her name is Gwenny. And when they left, they knew they were moving back. They knew she worked there for 6 years. My mom was getting married. And they knew they probably wouldn't live in the same place for a long time. But they felt like their friendship was so meaningful. They had that kind of urge, like you were saying, to make some kind of like meaningful commitment, because we can't say marriage, but what does that look like? And so I've always been told growing up that they made a Jonathan and David commitment, in the sense of this is lifelong, something like a covenant. And it's been really special because now growing up, I just visited Gwenny, 2 weeks ago or a few weeks ago, and she's been single her whole life, but she is, in my mind and in all practical intents and purposes, a part of our family. And I would just love that. I would love to see that be, more common, that there's uh-huh. a sense that friendships really are a profoundly important thing and they're worth making lifelong commitments to. And it's funny, 'cause like when you read back on some more ancient views of what it is to be a human, you know, if you read Aristotle or if you read Aquinas, what they see as the peak of being a human is friendship. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of lost that vision in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, you don't have to go too far back. Greco-Roman culture, but even when you think about like the life of Jesus the fact that his disciples were not just his students, but they were also his followers, but they were also his friends, and he called them his friends. And the fact that he, you know, never married and never had children, but was sustained in his public ministry by these friends. Mm-hmm. I think that says a lot about what it means to be a human fully alive, you know, what it means to be connected to each other. And I'm as a single person, I'm kind of encouraged that, you know, the person who was fully God and fully man and who we call our Savior, didn't know the bounds of marital intimacy, but he knew the intimacy of friendship, and friendship was, he needed friends, you know, yeah. Even though he was fully God, he also bound himself to his friends. And I think that's a model for all of us.
Absolutely. And if the primary relationship we see in Jesus' life, is not marriage, but friendship, we should probably take it pretty seriously.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, definitely. So, one other thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, in your book, and I'm sure you could describe this better than me, but you were trying to kind of take on a theology of vocation and give that to women to be able to think of themselves as having a calling and a purpose and to kind of be able to think through that well. And, for me, I have found that one of the things that helped me kind of discover and live into my vocation was having women around me who modeled what I like to call as kind of the capaciousness of womanhood. That there is this, I grew up surrounded by women, but my mom is this very kind of strong personality and, who has a big vision for life, but she was always doing ministry and she was a writer. So we were surrounded by other, writing women. And when I looked around me, I was like, wow, there's so much that women can be. And it wasn't that instilled me with a sense of this is what I should be, but it instilled me with this kind of broad imagination of all that women could live into. And for me, it's been really, I find it has been really important for me to have women around me that kind of helped me live into that vocation and figuring out who I am in the context of the capaciousness of the women around me. So what would you say, do you think in your life there's been a relationship between friendship, the women that have been around you in life, calling you to live into your vocation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hermeneutics group that I mentioned before is a really good example of that. Just, you know, that there's a sense of mutual encouragement and kind of a cheering on of each other when we're going after the thing that we think God has called us to do. And I think within that, it's really important that we are coming from different life stages and different senses of calling, but there's space to support one another and cheer one another on and not be threatened by someone else's calling. So, one of the women in the group has 3 very young children, and she would say, I mean, she's an editor and writer, and she's written a couple books. She would say her primary calling, at least in this stage, is to parent and mother these young children. And I think it's really important in that group that, you know, her calling is just as valued as anyone else's calling. There can sort of be a worldly desire to compare and compete and think, well, if she's doing that, should I be doing that too? And am I less of a woman or less of a leader because my calling doesn't look the same as hers? And just the diversity of callings is really important. And I would just love to see that modeled and given space in the local church. I think a lot of women in the local church can feel if there's a dominant culture and there's kind of a, and I'll just speak as a single person, you know, if most of my peers, most of my female peers in the church are married and raising young kids and would say that that is their, you know, primary calling or vocation, it can sometimes be hard to find my place in that space. And it would be the same as, you know, if you were at a church where there were a lot of young professionals and you were at home raising kids, you might feel like, is there space for me here? And I would just love the local church to be a place where women are encouraged to honor and support each other's various callings rather than making one better or more valuable or more spiritual than the other.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And I think the idea of making space for each other, making space for what you are called to be valuable and worthy, and is a really important thing. And it reminds me of this passage from No Man is an Island from Thomas Merton, where he says, "The beginning of love is the will to let those we love be perfectly themselves, the resolution to not twist them to fit our image. If in loving them we do not love what they are, but only the potential likeness to ourselves, we do not love them, we only love the reflection of ourselves that we find in them."
Wow, that's so good.
It is so good. And I think that there's this kind of glory to letting people live into who they are, into what God has called them into, and whatever season that is, and just being able to kind of watch on with awe and celebrate them and support them wherever they are. And I would also love to just see space made for that and to see women kind of take that up as a mantle to say, what is this space for me? What am I meant to live into? And then how can I make the space for other people around me to live into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so good. I think I've learned that a lot in my friendship with my friend Sarah, whose daughter is my goddaughter. I mean, Sarah is someone who, would probably say that mothering her young children is her primary calling in this season. And when I watch her parent her kids, I really think, wow, this is what she is gifted to do. I mean, this is such a natural alignment with the natural gifts and kind of spirit that she brings to things. And so, and it's been really important for her as well. It's been meaningful to have her cheer me on, even though we're not in the same life stage, for her to celebrate, like, when my book came out or if I'm writing something. Like, you know, there's there's a way of saying, yeah, we're pretty different, like in yeah. our dispositions and our life stage, but I see and honor like the beauty in your calling, and knowing that that's mutual is really key and really important.
Absolutely. And something I've thought a lot about is, how when we are with people who are different than us or have a different calling than us, we can get to encounter an aspect of God. I always start to quote, say that this is from the Bible, and then I realize that it's from Les Mis.
they're similar.
Yeah, they share some. And I think Les Mis is leaning on the Bible. But, the part in the song where he says, to love another person is to see the face of God. And there's this reality in friendship where when we can love somebody for their complete otherness than us, whether that's personality or calling, we get to encounter a part of God. And I think that when we purposefully invest in friendships where people are different stage, different than us, different personalities, kind of the glory of it is getting to encounter a part of God that we couldn't have encountered in ourselves just by ourselves.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. And just recognizing within that, like, God takes delight in the diversity of the gifts represented among God's people, you know, like that each calling and each person has a place that's honored and valued within the body.
Yeah.
And that to set up one calling or one type of calling as the best or the most valuable is to go against the Pauline vision of the body working together, and no part of the body can say to the other, I don't need you.
Yeah.
I think that's really beautiful. And Les Mis is, that's the best line from Les Mis.
I know. It's so good. It makes me want to go watch it right now. Well, Caitlin, we're going to start wrapping up. I would love to be able to send people your way. So where can people find your writing, your work, and what you're up to?
Yeah. So a good place to start is my website, which is just caitlinbeaty.com, KAETLYNBEATY.com. And I have there a collection of essays that I've written. There's lots of information about my book, A Woman's Place, and where to purchase it. I mean, as with all books, you can find it on Amazon. It's also on the Simon & Schuster website. And then I'm a pretty regular tweeter, so a lot of people follow me on Twitter at Caitlin Beaty. And then Instagram and Facebook I use less frequently, but I'm there as well. So I think the primary social media feeds, I'm not on Snapchat. I don't know that I have the energy to invest in that. I doubt that a lot of your listeners are like active users on Snapchat. But yeah, my website and then, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram are good places to start. And then if people want to learn more about Brazos, they can go to the Baker Books website. Let me pull up the Brazos page. It's just Baker Publishing Group /Brazos Press. And we have books from Karen Swallow Pryor and James K. Smith and Richard Mao and just David Gushy, really wonderful writers and thinkers. And our new releases and best-selling books are listed there if people want to get a sense for the kind of books that we publish.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we got to chat with Karen Swallow Pryor yesterday, which was really fun.
So. Oh, good. Good.
I know I follow you on Twitter, and you are a thoughtful and also often humorous tweeter, which is very delightful. It's a good relief in the newsfeed. And I don't do Snapchat really either. One of my friends from grad school told me to get Snapchat purely so he could send me pictures of the books that he was reading. And that is the only thing that I know about that form of social media. So there you go.
I feel like it's more of a Generation Z. Like if you're 15, if we were both 15, we'd probably be.
I'm sure it'd be all the rage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Caitlin, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I loved our conversation, and I know that it will help and bless many people. So I hope you have a lovely day, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me on, and congratulations on the book with your sister and your mom. And I'm encouraged that it will help and encourage a lot of your readers. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. All right. I will talk with you another time, and blessings to everyone who's listening to this.
Thank you for listening to this special Girls Club episode of Speaking with Joy. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. And don't forget to purchase your copy of Girls Club anywhere books are sold.